Welcome to the program Old Testament Prophets with Father Mitch Pacwa.
Shalom, shalom. The peace of God be with you. My name is Father Mitchell Pacwa. I'm a Jesuit priest. And I teach Old Testament at Loyola University in Chicago. And we're going through the prophet Isaiah in this series. And it's a difficult prophecy to deal with. And we mentioned last week that there's a long section in this prophet of oracles against nations, many nations. Okay? It begins in chapter 13 and goes all the way to chapter 23. Now, some of them come from different times and are about different periods of history, like the ones we saw in chapters 13 and 14, which deal mostly with Babylon, and mostly about the destruction of Babylon almost 200 years later. And also it deals with the end of the world, which obviously hasn't happened yet. But now we're going to see a number of other oracles against the nations. And these probably relate to the time of King Hezekiah, the time when he first became king around 715. And there are all sorts of troubles in the kingdom. Now, not all of these come from that time, but some of them certainly do. So let's take a look. If you open up to the book of Isaiah, chapter 14, and we'll see that after the prophecies against Babylon ended, that we'll now move in verse 24 to 27 to oracles against Assyria. Okay? Now, we're going to see one series of oracles against different nations after another, and we'll just go and plow right on through them. Now, Assyria, this is way off in what we now call Iraq, up in the northern part of Iraq. Vicious, nasty people. And they had nasty kings. And here's what the Lord of hosts, Yahweh Sabaoth, has to say. He swears in verse 24. When the Lord swears an oath, it's not a false one. Surely as I thought, so it shall happen. So I just have to think about this, and it's going to take place. And as I have planned it, so it shall stand, that I will break Ashur, that is Assyria. I will break Assyria in my land. And upon my mountains, I will trample him underfoot. I'm going to squash him like a bug and sort of squash him and mash him up like an old cockroach on the floor. That's what I'm going to do to him. And his yoke shall depart from off of them, and his burden shall depart from off their shoulder. In other words, after the Lord takes and squashes him like a bug in a rug, that the burden and the yoke was going to be taken off of all the peoples that had been enslaved by the Assyrians. Because they would put yokes on people to make them do work like oxen and asses. And now that's going to be taken away. And this is the purpose of the Lord, and it won't be changed. No way to get out of it. And then we see, as we move to verses 28 to 32, we see an oracle that relates to the time of the death of King Ahaz. So that pins it down pretty specifically to the year 715. And that's exactly the year that Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, took over. So the year that King Ahaz died, this was the burden. Don't you rejoice, you Philistines. Don't any of you rejoice. Mm-mm. Because the rod of the one who used to hit you is broken. Now who's he talking about there? Probably Assyria. In other words, probably the death of King Tiglath-Pileser III, who died in 727, or it could be the death of King Shalmaneser V, who was another king of Assyria, the son of Tiglath-Pileser, and he died in 722. So maybe, and as a matter of fact, when Shalmaneser died, his dynasty died out, And a usurper came in, that is, somebody who was not the legitimate king took over. And that was Sargon II. All right? So perhaps the Philistines were rejoicing that the Assyrians had lost two of their kings and ended one whole dynasty. And the Assyrians would rejoice in that because they were part of the Assyrian Empire. Okay? But that could be the end. Or another thing that could be going on is that because they used to be part of the Empire of Judah and King Ahaz used to rule over Philistia, now maybe they're glad that King Ahaz is dead. And the prophet is saying, don't rejoice over that. Don't you be happy about that, because that trouble is over, but I got some other troubles for you. Let's see what he's got to say. For out of the serpent's root shall come forth a basilisk. A basilisk is another serpent, a poisonous one. And his fruit shall be a flying serpent, a serpent that flies away at you to bite. And the firstborn of the poor shall feed, and the needy shall lie down in safety. And I will kill your root with famine, and your remnant shall be slain. So that the Philistines should not rejoice, because they're going to be wiped out. And that poor people are going to inherit their land. Now what's he talking about? Well, the Philistines revolted around 714. And they started a revolt against the Assyrians. And they got wiped out. This city got burned down to the ground by the Assyrians for revolting. Okay? And Isaiah warns even them. He's not glad that this is going to happen, but he warns them that this is going to be their fate. They don't listen to him, and they are destroyed as a result. So howl, O gate! Cry out, O city! Scream, as a matter of fact! Melt away, O Philistines, all of you, because the smoke is coming from the north, and there's no straggler in his ranks. The smoke from the north means Assyria. And when he comes along, there's no stragglers. All his soldiers are eager to come down to punish Assyria and burn it. And it's a smoke that's going to burn down Assyria. So that's what's going to happen. Now we see another set of oracles against the nations begin in chapter 15. And here we go to another country, Moab. Now where's Moab today? It's in the country of Jordan. As a matter of fact, it's in southwestern corner of Jordan. It's right along the east coast of the Dead Sea. All right? That's a pretty dry area. I've been there myself. And you can, as a matter of fact, I'm hoping to go again this year to lead another tour there to see where old Moab was along the east part of the Dead Sea. And the Moabites used to be part of the country of Israel. They used to be part of Judah. And that they had, you know, some, they were vassals to Judah. But now they're going to have a burden as well. And this is a confusing one because of all the names. But it's basically saying here in a lament that Isaiah gives over Moab, for in the night that Ar of Moab is laid waste, he is brought to ruin. In one night, the chief city is going to be wiped out. And the other chief city, Kir, is going to be laid waste in one night and brought to ruin. And you can run and you can hide. You can go to your high places, your temples and all that. You can go to Nebo, the big mountain, and all these other towns. But all that's going to happen is you're going to be wiped out. There's going to be death, mourning, shaving of heads as a way to show that death and mourning have happened. And you're going to be wiped out, poor Moab. We're looking at the words of Isaiah that are spoken against the people of Moab. That people will, in what we would now call south, western Jordan, on the east side of the Dead Sea. All right. Now, he's saying that they're going to be wiped out and destroyed, and all he sees in store for them is desolation and mourning and sackcloth and baldness. Baldness not because they used the wrong shampoo, but baldness because when people were lamenting their dead, they would shave the hair off of their heads all the way, okay? And that's what's in store for the people of Moab. And as a matter of fact, in the year 650... the Moabites were attacked by Arabs who came in and destroyed their kingdom. And from that point on, the Moabites really didn't exist as an independent people anymore. And they got so mixed in with Arabs that they really are no longer Moabites. Just Arabs mixed in there. But then, if we take a look at the next section of chapter 15, we begin with verse 10. Excuse me, chapter 16, verse 1 to 5. In chapter 16, verse 1 to 5, we see not a lament, but a cry for help, an appeal, that the people of Moab go to the people of Jerusalem and they ask for help. Well, now why would they do that? Well, Moab used to belong to Judah, right? It was part of their empire at one time. David had conquered it. And at different times would go back and forth. Sometimes they'd be free, sometimes they'd get caught again. We found a stone from one of the Moabite kings, a king named Mesha, and he said he got himself free back in the 800s. But then they got part of the kingdom of Judah all over again. And so they appeal to Judah, and they ask for help. And let's see what kind of help they ask for. Send you lambs for the ruler of the land, from the crags that are around the wilderness, from the mount of the daughter of Zion. So that's what they're crying out to Zion, that is Jerusalem, for help. For it shall be that, like wandering birds, like a scattered nest, so shall the daughters of Moab be at the fords of Arnon. Arnon is a river inside Moab, the main one, okay? And the people, the daughters of Moab, that is, all those women who are left after the war, or the daughters of Moab also might well mean the villages that were part of Moab. The capital cities would be the big sisters or the mothers, and then the daughters would be the little villages, okay? And they're going to come wandering around like birds from a scattered nest. Now, birds in a scattered nest, what an image, huh? That they usually are confused, they don't know what's going on. And that's what the Moabites are going to be like. Birds from a scattered nest are going to come running over to Jerusalem for help. And they'll say, counsel us, okay? Bring us counsel. Do some justice. Make your shadow at like the night in the middle of the noonday. Hide the outcast. Don't betray the fugitive. In other words, hide us. Hide us. When we come to you, Jerusalem, take us in. Give us some wisdom. Give us some justice. The justice of helping those who are, you know, cast out. You know, that's one of the things that we Americans can be very proud of in our history. That people who have been kicked out of their own country because of war have been welcome over here. How many times, again and again, we've welcomed those people who had to flee their own nation. And the Lord, you know, would recommend that. That's something that we in justice can do. That is an act of justice to help those who've been thrown out of their nations by tyrants. People like the people of Vietnam, or people from Haiti, and people from South Africa, and people from post-war Europe and pre-war Europe. You know, that was a really good act of justice for us to do. Moab asked for the same thing. And they say, let my outcast dwell with you, Jerusalem. Let them dwell with you. For Moab, be like a covering from the face of the spoiler. For extortion is at an end, spoiling ceases. They that trample down are consumed in the land. And a throne is established through mercy. And there sits on it, in the tent of David, one who judges and seeks justice and is ready in righteousness. So that if you have a real king of David, a real one who belongs to that family, he'll give us justice. Isn't that interesting? That these Moabites expect righteousness and judgment from the family of David. Even though they're foreigners, even though they had been conquered by David, they expect hope from the family of David and righteousness. Now, you and I also can pick up something on that in a way, can't we, huh? That we look to one of the sons of David for righteousness. We look to Jesus for righteousness, don't we? And let's make sure that we seek righteousness and safety from him. Safety from our sins, and most especially, safety from the devil. We can find safety from the evil one and all his demons by seeking refuge in Jesus. For the Moabites sought refuge from their enemies by looking for help from Jerusalem and the family of David. Well, let's go on here. Verses 6 through 12 are another lament. A lament of Moab because of all that's going on. And it starts off with some group saying this. We have heard Shammatnu, or the pride of Moab. He's very proud. And even of his haughtiness, and we heard of his pride and all of his arrogance and all of his ill-founding boastings. Now, why would they boast down in Moab? They figured nobody could conquer them. They figured that they were pretty safe. As a matter of fact, one of their cities was almost impregnable. It's now what we call Petra. Okay? But they boasted of all this. But therefore, because they were haughty, because they were boasting, Moab shall wail for Moab. Everyone shall wail. They'll scream out. They'll howl. For the sweet cakes of Kir Hashet you shall mourn, sorely stricken. These sweet cakes, the word cakes that they offered up as sacrifices to the goddess of fertility. Okay? And these people of Moab are going to be shouting and screaming out, you know, as they mourn here. And they're going to, it's going to happen to them because of their pride. Have you begun to pick up a theme here? And that old Isaiah, he is really getting down on human pride. As far as he's concerned, that's one of the worst sins you can commit. And because of pride, the Moabites are going to be destroyed. Now, isn't that the case, though? That St. Ignatius of Loyola says, all sin stems from pride. Ultimately, every sin you and I commit stems from our arrogance. Saying, hey, I can do what I please. I can do what I feel like doing. And if God says some other commandment, I don't care. That's too bad for God. Well, that's not the case. God is the Lord of creation. And if we, in our arrogance and pride, say, I'm going to do what I please, then God is going to say, okay, if you won't do my will, then your will be done. That is, go ahead. Be off on your own and experience death and lament. For you have chosen death when you chose sin. And you will get what you have asked for. Let's not be like that. Let's be humble and small. And let's choose God and let Him be God. We're looking at Isaiah's oracles against nations, huh? Especially at Moab. And how he says about the Moabites that because of their haughtiness and arrogance and pride, they're going to be brought down and punished and destroyed. As a matter of fact, in chapter 16, verse 12, he even says, it shall come to pass that when it is seen that Moab has become tired out from and tired itself out on its high places, that is, its pagan temples, then they shall come to the temple and pray, and Moab won't prevail. That is, Moab won't succeed in their prayers. Okay? And verse 13 and 14 give another oracle that seems to be from some later time, because it says, now this is the word that the Lord spoke concerning Moab in time past. Now that's odd, but it says here that the first part of the chapter 16 and chapter 15, that's what the Lord one time spoke to Moab. Long time ago. Okay? That's what they used to hear. Hasn't happened yet. I guess that's what the author's saying. He says, but now, Yahweh has spoken, saying, within 3 years, as the years of a hireling, and the glory of Moab shall become contemptible. That they and the glory of Moab shall become like nothing, and all his great multitude. And the remnant of Moab, the ones who survive, will be very small. Now this is seems to refer to some later time. Perhaps this is an addition around 650. You know, somebody put this in to say it's going to happen in 3 years, making very specific the time when this would take place against Moab. Okay? But then we go away from Moab, and we come to another nation. And that is Damascus and Ephraim. And that's in chapter 17, verses 1 to 11. Now, again, this is crazy. Because Damascus and Ephraim were already wiped out by the time of 715, by the time of Hezekiah. And so what's probably going on is that this oracle in chapter 17 refers back to the time of 732, that is the time when Assyria destroyed the coalition of Israelites of the north and the people of Damascus who attacked Judah. Okay, they came down from the north to attack Judah in the south. All right, and this text seems to refer to that period of time. So now we've jumped from 715 to an oracle that Isaiah probably gave around 735. Okay, 20 years earlier. It just gets tossed in here because it's one of the oracles against the nations, and one of Isaiah's disciples sort of put it in here because we're on a run about talking about the other nations. Let's keep on it, and we'll just talk about them. So here we see Masad Damascus, the burden of Damascus. To behold, Damascus will be taken away from being a city. It's going to be removed as a city. And it shall become a ruinous heap. And as a matter of fact, that happened. The Assyrians came in and destroyed it in 732 and made it a heap. And the cities of Aroer are forsaken. They shall be used for flocks. That is, they won't be for people to live in because the walls will be knocked down. And instead, sheep will be walking around in the ruins. That's what's going on there. And Aroer is a section down in southern Syria. And those will slide down, no one shall make them afraid. The fortress shall also cease from Ephraim, that is, from Israel. Ephraim means the northern part of Israel, okay? So they're going to also cease being a fortress. And the kingdom is going to cease from Damascus. And the remnant of Aram, that is, of Syria, shall be like the glory of the children of Israel. Okay, in other words, the glory of the children of Israel is going to be shamed and wiped out, and the same is going to happen to Damascus. Okay, so once again, we see here an oracle against them, and it shall happen on that day, in verse 4. It shall happen on that day that the glory of Jacob shall be made thin, and the fat of his flesh shall become skinny. Why is that going to happen? Because when the Assyrians come out, they're going to besiege the city. They're going to surround it with armies, and people aren't going to have anything to eat. They're going to get skinny, and their bones are going to show. That's what's going to happen to them. And it shall happen that it'll be like the when the harvest man comes, the gatherer shall come and gather all the grain and reap the ears. That's what it's going to be like. That when the Assyrians come to punish the northern kingdom and the kingdom of Damascus, it's going to be like a man coming down there with a sickle and whomp! It's going to take off the heads of the grain. That's what's going to happen to the kingdom. And the Assyrians are the ones who are going to be the lawnmower, okay? So they're going to be grass, and the Assyrians are the lawnmower. And there shall be gleanings like the beating of an olive tree, two or three berries in the top of the highest branch, four or five in the branches of a fruitful tree, says the Lord God of Israel. In other words, a few people will escape. There'll be gleanings, a few here, a few there, a few that get dropped and forgotten about. But that's all that's going to be left. Just a few, like gleanings, like a few berries that are left on top of a tree that you don't get to pick. Okay. And why is this going to be? Okay. Why is this going to happen to them? In verse 7, on that day a man shall look at his maker, and his eyes shall look to the Holy One of Israel. Uh-oh, they're not going to like that. They're not going to like looking at it. Because what have they been doing? They've been making idols in verse 8. They won't pay attention to their altars, the work of their hands, nor to that which their fingers made, the Asherim or the sun images. In other words, these people made idols, and now instead of idols and their own homemade altars and stuff, they are going to see the Lord Himself. God's going to appear. And that's trouble. Have you ever gotten caught doing something wrong? That you're making, as a matter of fact, when I was a young novice, one of the novices was imitating our rector. His back was to the door, and he was imitating the way the rector talks and all that. Meanwhile, who walked up behind him? The real rector, all right? And boy, was he in trouble. Well, it's the same kind of thing that's happening here. They had imitation. They're imitating God by making idols of Asherim, other gods, and sun gods. Now, the real God shows up, and they're in trouble. Here comes the judge. On that day, his strong cities shall be like forsaken places, forsaken before the children of Israel. They shall become woods and forests and deserted in a desolation. Because you have forgotten God, the God of your salvation. You have not paid attention to the rock who is your stronghold. That is, the rock is God, the Lord. The rock is salvation. And you planted gardens and you had these foreign places where you would have orgies and stuff. So on that day, you're going to have pain and desolation. That's what's going to happen to those who choose the false gods. Now, we've seen Isaiah say this many times before, that idolatry is absolutely forbidden, any kind of idolatry. And you and I can't allow any substitutes to come into our lives, substitutes for God, because someday the real God is going to show up. So what our life is supposed to be now is a relationship and a communion with the true God through Jesus Christ, His Son. And by communing with the true God now, you and I will be ready for Him when He does meet us face to face.